Hello, I'm Hugh Dennis, and with us are Zoe Lyons, Ken Cheng, Jake Yap, Gemma Arrowsmith, and Luke Kempner, who has once again begged me to let him say this.
The Now Show!
Come on, be honest, it still needs work, right? This week, governments everywhere seem to be learning the truth of the famous words of Mr. Michael Tyson.
Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
In other words, theory and practice are different things. It's even worse in the case of Brexit, where it's more a case of...
Everybody's got a plan, except Theresa May, who triggered Article 50 with that one, took 2 years to come up with one, and when she finally did... got punched in the mouth.
The theory was so simple, but the reality has proved fiendishly complicated and contentious. Theresa May has given herself 2 weeks to convince the nation her deal is the best option. She needed 2 weeks because that's the average time it takes to contact all your utility companies and book the removal van. All the stops are being pulled out. Downing Street even had to deny offering one Eurosceptic Conservative MP a knighthood in return for backing the deal. Not only did it not work, but the PM had to issue a statement saying...
It is completely untrue that the honour system will be exploited in this way. I am clear that I intend to make my arguments to other leaders, including Sir Jeremy Corbyn, Dame Nicola Sturgeon and Lord Cable, the first Earl of Twickenham. I've also proposed a title for Jacob Rees-Mogg, but sadly I can't say it out loud before the watershed.
But it's not just Britain discovering the world is more complicated than campaign promises make it seem. Donald Trump can't understand why, when he promised to create new jobs in America, General Motors has instead announced they're closing 4 factories. Trump reacted with the dignity we have come to expect.
General Motors, who many people are calling a failing company, who build very, very bad cars that nobody wants, need to watch their step. They have very nice showrooms there. It would be a shame if somebody burnt them down. Because it could happen. There are many trees around those showrooms, and nobody has raked the ground in years. And I know some people, bad people, who can make bad things happen. Sadly, because of the Mueller inquiry, I can't get in touch with them anymore. I have to pretend I never knew them. Not that I ever did know them. I know that because my lawyer told me. Although, as of yesterday, he is a very weak man and not very smart.
The CEO of General Motors is a woman, Mary Barra, which also helped by allowing him to get in one of his catchphrases.
Lock her up! Lock her up!
But the truth is, General Motors is reconfiguring its entire production towards electric and self-guided cars in order to position itself for a future that Trump has no interest in. We know this because last Friday, 13 of his own government departments collaborated to produce a 1,500-page report on climate change, to which the president's official response on Monday was...
I don't believe it.
Which, weirdly, was a lot of people's response to him becoming president in the first place. However, you have to remember that Donald Trump hasn't read 1,500 pages in his entire lifetime, let alone over a weekend. But if an icon of capitalist manufacturing like GM is switching to electric vehicles, they presumably do believe it, and therein is Trump's problem. The world simply won't do what he wants, just like the EU won't do what we want, and the French won't do what Macron wants, and Noel Edmonds won't do what the entire nation wants, because it wouldn't be physically possible, and you couldn't show it on TV anyway. Back at home, it was a similar story, with campaign promises meeting hard reality and coming off worse. The Chancellor and the Governor of the Bank of England both predicted that all forms of Brexit would make the country poorer, and various Tory MPs responded by quoting President Trump, but in a British accent.
I don't believe it.
The official figures caused fury among the no-deal supporters, but the real problem for the no-deal faction is that they're asking the country to make a leap of faith when for decades British governments have always urged caution, not just politically and financially, but in almost every aspect of our lives. We're just not used to officialdom urging us to take a huge gamble. Otherwise, we'd all have grown up in a very different environment.
Remember... always go back and sneak a look at a lighted firework.
Think once, think twice. Think run into the road and get your football.
If you see anything suspicious, please think briefly about telling a member of staff, but don't bother in the end. See it, say it, ignore it. It's probably nothing.
But what with no dealers on one side and Remainers on the other, the voting arithmetic is now so desperate that Theresa May has offered a public TV debate. But ultimately, if Downing Street really want a Sunday primetime slot, the opponent won't be Corbyn anyway. It'll be whatever's on the other channels.
This deal is the only deal on the table, but let me remind you that...
Also on the table is this kangaroo's penis, which you have to chew and swallow to win a meal for camp of delicious...
chlorinated chicken and hormone-treated beef under a US trade deal. This is why I would appeal to MPs of all parties to...
wake up from their long hibernation, where they have slumbered blissfully unaware... of the dangers of
making this country worse off, which nobody voted for. Not that we support another vote, because we have already voted, but not for this, although I support this. If it weren't this, but something different, what do you say to that?
I say that was some magnificent spinning there. You were all over the place. With the fancy footwork, turning this way and that, you were a blur. I don't know what to think. I'm pretty sure you don't either.
With this deal, I can promise that by 2021, Britain will have arrived back in the 1950s.
What it all means is that MPs have a tough choice to make with all the Bank of England's different Brexit scenarios. It's worse than choosing a broadband package.
Hello, is that the helpline? I'm having trouble choosing between these Brexit offers.
OK, well, let me take you through them, sir. There's Brexit Disorderly. That comes with 7.5% unemployment, 30% off house prices and 48% off commercial property.
Right. The advert mentions something about a £350 million a week NHS bonus.
Oh, that offer is subject to terms and conditions. There's also Brexit Disruptive. That's only 5.75% unemployment and 14% off house prices. There is Brexit Close.
Ah, what's that one?
Economy is only 1% smaller than if we stayed.
Well, that's tempting. Do we get free trade deals with that?
Limited offers only, but it does come with a special bonus.
What's that?
It really annoys Donald Trump.
Very tempting indeed.
There's also Labour Brexit.
Ah, how does that work?
You may well ask. Nobody has any idea. We also offer the Canada package. That's some tariffs, but with trade deals. The Norway package, that's customs union, but no tariffs. And there's also what we call the Swiss package. That's where we leave, but carry on exactly as if we hadn't.
Why is that called the Swiss?
It's cloud cuckoo land.
By a strange coincidence, as we record this, there are exactly 12 days to go until the Brexit vote, which makes it a bit seasonal.
On the 12th day of Brexit, my true love gave to me
a furious E-R-G.
On the second day of Brexit, my true love gave to me
2 weeks of hell and a furious E-R-G.
On the third day of Brexit, my true love gave to me
bound French hens, 2 weeks of hell and a furious E-R-G.
On the fourth day of Brexit, my true love gave to me
four gloomy forecasts, banned French hens, 2 weeks of hell and a furious E-R-G.
On the fifth day of Brexit, my true love gave to me...
Unfortunately, the Gold Rings melody is copyright and we're unable to use it on a radio budget.
On the 12th day of Brexit, my true love gave to me
12 banks are leaving,
asylum seekers swimming,
Tim Weatherspoon cheering,
9
renegotiations, 8 Farage's grumbling,
7 Hammond's hedging,
6 more resignations,
5
100-point drop on the stock markers in the event of a no deal. Sorry, the melody is copyright and we are unable to use it on a radio budget.
Four gloomy forecasts, banned French hens, 2 weeks of hell and a furious E-R-G.
Now, taking a break from touring her nationwide show Entry Level Human, would you please welcome to the stage Zoe Lyons?
This week, we witnessed the NASA-led mission Mars InSight land successfully on the Red Planet. The space probe completed a six-month journey of over 300 million miles and endured 7 minutes of terror to slow from the speed of a ballistic bullet to just 5 miles per hour, a task made tricky as Mars has even less atmosphere than a Lib Dem conference. It touched down in one piece and on schedule. An incredible achievement. And as NASA Space Mission Director Thomas Zuckerman stated, getting to Mars is really, really hard. Now, I don't want to take away from NASA's success, but when it comes to really, really hard journeys, can I suggest they attempt to get anywhere on time using the beleaguered rail network service in this country? To be honest, 7 minutes of terror sounds rather exhilarating compared to hours of soul-destroying delays and cancellations. As a touring comic, check website for details, I have dragged my battered bag on and off many a locomotive, and the experience can be more arduous and uncertain than blasting off into the abyss. On the same day InSight landed successfully on Mars, my train, down here on Earth, was delayed for 50 minutes because of, and I'm quoting here, my friends, issues. Issues. Issues makes it sound like the train was having some sort of crisis of confidence. Smacking its little wheelie legs on the track, screaming into the night air, I never even wanted to be a train. I just find it incredible that these two things can happen on the same day, you know, to infinity and beyond. Issues. It was revealed this week that train performance is at a 5-year low, yet from January fares will go up by 3.1%. Now, if we ever do get to a point where we are colonising other planets, secretly I hope it's not a British company that gets a transport contract on that project. Think about it. It would be a very complicated system of single tickets to get the cheapest fare there in the first place. And don't attempt to travel on a bank holiday. It'll be a bus replacement from Pluto. Issues. Last week, I was sitting on a, yeah, you guessed it, late-running train from London to Newcastle, entertaining myself by playing the what-is-that-smell game, when I watched a little old lady stop the guard as he came down the carriage. She very politely said to him, just once, I'd like this train to be on time. And he looked at her and he said, is it always late when you're on it? And she said, yes, yes it is. To which he retorted, well, maybe it's your fault. Shifting blame. I half expected him to come over the tannoy and say, apologies for the late running of this train. It's because of Barbara and Coach D. She's always on it and it's always late. I get so frustrated when the basics don't work because this country has such a strong history of successful engineering. And we currently have brilliant British scientists working on our very own Mars rover, due to land on the planet in 2021. The UK Space Agency has invested over £250 million on the project, which sounds like a lot, but actually you could pay almost that if you had to buy a ticket on the day of travel if you were going to Manchester. We live in a time of contradictions. Things are both awesome and awful at the same time. Technological advancements that were often originally developed for space exploration are being used in our daily lives. GPS has its origin in the Sputnik era when scientists were able to track the satellites with shifts in its radio signal. And now we use it to track the whereabouts of the food we couldn't be asked to cook ourselves being delivered on the back of an uninsured moped. I actually saw a little takeaway man knocked off his bike the other day, and he was all right, but all I could think was somewhere there's a couple sitting on a sofa, undoubtedly wearing matching activewear, just looking at a stationary blue dot on an iPad, going, that's not moving, is it? He's eaten that, hasn't he? It's actually time for me to depart now on my own voyage of discovery. I, of course, am travelling by train this evening. Please tell my wife I love her very much. She knows. I expect with our railways bursting at the seams with overcrowding, on this busy Friday night, I'll be getting quite a bit of my own space probed. Thank you very much.
Terry Lyons. And we now cross over to Buenos Aires and our G20 correspondent, Jake Yap.
Señoras y señores, bienvenidos a G20 en Argentina. Welcome to G20 2K18. Welcome to this land of plenty. The climate here is excellent. There's civil disruption. It stinks of corruption. The perfect place for the G20. Here in Buenos Aires, we've cleared the locals' diaries and driven out the ones who might get rowdy. But there'll still be tensions when somebody mentions it's time to take a selfie with the Saudi. G20, it's not dodgy, just don't mention Khashoggi. Welcome, as Trump reassesses, Just how oblige his noblesse is. Should his time here have been spent on Crimea or getting back those VHSs? We're preening and we're primping for when we meet Xi Jinping and wondering how the dinner bill gets split. The hotel rooms are paid for, 'cause when you're in a trade war, you never know who'll do a moonlight flit. G20, a world of laughter, just don't mention NAFTA. The post-Brexit deals with the big dogs are going to be made. Yeah! Ignore Mrs. May when she's humping your leg for more trade. G20, full steam ahead, just don't mention Ukraine,
Crimea,
Bolsonaro,
Yemen,
tariffs,
steel,
Syria,
aluminium,
Iran,
North Korea,
Salisbury,
climate change.
And we'll see you next year in Osaka if we're not all dead. Yeah!
And now, would you please welcome to the stage Cambridge dropout, professional poker player and comedian, Ken Cheng.
So it's coming up to Christmas time, which means I'm going to talk about what Christmas was like growing up in a Chinese family in the UK. We celebrated Christmas, but we could never commit to the whole thing. Like, my dad never dressed up as Santa, because you just can't have a Chinese Santa. There's just no way we could grow that thick a beard. It would actually make a lot of sense if Santa were actually Chinese. Think about it. He wears all red. Ho 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 sounds like the name of a great noodle place. And he owns a factory that makes toys using very questionable labor practices. On the actual day, we celebrate Christmas by having Christmas dinner at my uncle's house. And there's always a bit of tension because my uncle is very different from the rest of my family, by which I mean he's white. So there's always a cultural divide there, which especially comes out when they talk about politics. I always dread Christmas dinner because it somehow ends up with my mum saying the phrase, Mao Zedong wasn't that bad. We love playing trivia games at Christmas. Last Christmas, we played a game called the 90s Quiz. And my mum got the question, what was bovine spongiform encephalopathy more commonly known as? And she just went, sorry, I'm not into pop music. So many Christmas traditions just don't make sense to a foreigner. Like the mistletoe. That concept seems completely alien to my Chinese parents, mostly because they never show each other any affection whatsoever. I just don't know how that tradition ever started. We're standing under some berries. That means we now have to kiss. Who fell for that? Also, try explaining the birth of Jesus to someone who's not from here. It just makes no sense. Like the three wise men, why are they giving a baby gold and perfume? Because apparently it's important for a baby to smell nice and have inflation-proof assets. I'm not good at buying people Christmas presents. I'm just too lazy. And whenever I get called out on it, I just tell them, oh, the Chinese don't celebrate Christmas, and you're being really insensitive to my culture. I found out recently that it's actually quite normal in Chinese custom to give money as a present, which is why my new default Christmas present is to give someone a £20 note, except here it's bad etiquette to leave the price tag on, so I tip X out the 20. I found grown adults get very annoyed when you give them money, especially when you do it via bank transfer. No one's appreciative on Christmas morning when they wake up to a text from me asking for their sort code and account number. I don't know why British people aren't okay giving money as a present, but we are okay giving a gift card. It's the exact same as giving money, except with a more limited range of options. A friend once bought me a £20 Sainsbury's gift card. I was very annoyed. So what I did was, I went to Sainsbury's, spent it on a £20 iTunes gift card, gave it back to them next year's Christmas, so the options were even more limited. I'm just worried about getting someone something they don't want or already have. That's why when I had to get my flatmate a present, I figured out a life hack. In June, I hid one of their Amazon deliveries, wrapped it up, waited 6 months, then gave it back to him on Christmas Day. It's the perfect present because it's something I knew he definitely wanted, but didn't already have. Obviously, he figured out what I'd done. He was pretty annoyed. So I just told him, oh, that's how we do it in China. And you're being really insensitive to my culture. Thank you, I've been Ken Cheng.
Ken Cheng. And so, as we head into December, we can't put it off any longer. We have to face the awkward facts.
Winter is coming.
Although, of course, we mustn't forget that in Britain, the cold season divides into two distinct periods. Pre-Christmas winter and post-Christmas winter. Pre-Christmas winter is this.
Snow falls softly in streets full of laughing children in colourful scarves and hats, while adults sip mulled wine in front of a blazing hearth.
That's the one you see in every TV commercial between September and the 24th of December. It's not to be confused with post-Christmas winter, which is this.
We regret to announce that the 7:46 by Milton Keynes Central is delayed until March. Customers are advised not to take alternative routes since the council has run out of gritting salt. They have sold it all to Jacob Rees-Mogg to rub into Theresa May's wounds.
You'll also notice that snow entirely changes its character pre and post the festive season. Pre-Christmas snow means...
Bookie slash odds on a white Christmas. Shop stock up on sledges. Send us your pictures.
Post-Christmas snow means...
Millions to freeze to death as Arctic blast grinds nation to a halt.
This will often be accompanied by...
NHS close to collapse.
The Daily Telegraph will say...
Weather to improve under no-deal Brexit.
The Daily... The Daily Express will say...
Cold front from Eastern Europe replaces native British weather.
And, of course, some scientifically illiterate idiot will tweet...
Whatever happened to global warming?
And sure enough, he did, last Thursday. The beginning of December used to be marked by Advent, but nowadays it's traditionally marked by adverts for shops and celebrities eating insects. Even though at this time of year there are gut-wrenching trials to be faced much closer to home.
Welcome to what we like to call the office Christmas party trial. In front of you, you have warm budget Chardonnay in a plastic pint glass.
Oh, God.
You don't have to do the trial at any point. You can shout, I'm a trainee human resources assistant, get me out of here. And we'll get you in an Uber with some Nurofen as quickly as we can.
No, I want to prove I can do it.
Your time starts now.
Oh, God, that's so sour. Ugh.
Oh, you need to finish the glass or you won't be drunk enough to face what's under this lid.
Ugh.
It's a vol-au-vent that isn't made of wallaby scrotum, but tastes like it is.
Oh, no.
You don't have to eat it. You can instead humiliate yourself by dancing with your boss to Uptown Funk.
The end of Nice Winter is marked by New Year. This normally involves everybody getting drunk, mainly because that's the best way to cope with seeing all the stuff you paid full price for a week earlier being flogged off at a massive discount. This is one of the big worries about holding the Brexit vote in December. Theresa May will be really annoyed if she buys the EU's deal and Italy get a much better deal in January. Although the sales do mean that if the Prime Minister does end up losing her job, she should find a new one quite quickly.
Just 10% deposit with nothing to pay for 6 months. This sofa genuinely is a good deal. It's also the only deal available. If you don't buy this sofa, you're back to square one.
Americans always make a big thing of New Year, although it's a much scarier occasion with Trump in the White House. Frankly, when you know he's got access to the nuclear button, the last thing you want to hear coming out of the West Wing is a load of people going...
10, 9, 8, 7, 6.
And you won't hear the rest because you'll be in the nearest basement. New Year, of course, is also the time of New Year's resolutions, where people make promises that they know they're not going to be able to keep. In Theresa May's case, that's not so unusual, of course.
Prime Minister, what's your New Year's resolution?
I am very clear that I do have a resolution, and that my resolution is the best resolution for the country.
Do you have a resolution, Mr. Corbyn?
My resolution is to somehow bring about a general election.
Anything else?
No, nothing else whatsoever.
Mr. Rees-Mogg, do you have any resolutions?
One has devoted a great deal of cogitative endeavour towards that end, and I would reply in the affirmative. My New Year's resolution is to improve my ability at forging signatures. I intend to master another 22 by the end of January.
May I ask why?
Don't be impertinent.
So, this week, a former head of digital communications in Whitehall claimed that ministers and civil servants ask tech support for strategies to make it harder for people to contact them. So, we've asked the audience, what do you do when you want to make yourself unreachable?
Print business cards with one minor mistake. That's quite a good one.
So, what do you do when you want to make yourself unreachable? Connect to the train Wi-Fi.
Get a job on the BT Openreach help desk.
Live in Suffolk.
What do you want to do when you make yourself unreachable? I don't care anymore. I've retired today.
That's it, I think, pretty much. Apart from this one, which I misread. It says put in earplugs, but because this is a satirical programme, I thought it said Putin earplugs. Thank you, and, oh, hang on. I better just, get that. Hello?
Hi, Hugh. It's Steve.
Hello.
I've just looked at my diary, and today is marked Now Show, so I think the series starts this week.
No, the series finishes this week.
Oh, what? So I've missed it? The whole lot?
Well, honestly, the only thing left is the credits.
Oh. Well, it's not much, but it's better than nothing, as Theresa May said when she presented her Brexit deal. Have you said thank you for listening and goodbye?
No, I haven't said that yet.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening and goodbye.
You've been listening to what was apparently the last in the current series of The Now Show, starring Zoe Lyons, Ken Cheng, Jake Yap, Gemma Arrowsmith and Luke Kempner, all of whom wrote the date down properly. It was written by Steve Punt and Hugh Dennis, with additional material from Jenny LaVille, Sarah Morgan, Ian Smith, Anya Magliano and Laura Major. The producer was Matt Strong. It was a BBC Studios production.